So this is my mom, Nellie.
Yay, yay.
Say, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to my daughter, what?
Podcast.
Podcast.
I know, podcast. That's a weird name. Hey, everybody. It's Lisa Alvarado. Thank you for tuning in to Find the Funny, another installment. Is that what you call it? Is it an installment?
So. Episode,
no, episode, installment.
Finding the funny.
That's a journey. That's such a bachelor term, isn't it? The bachelor.
Oh, I'm on my journey.
This is my journey.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome. I am so excited to have my guest today. It's Peter Berman. He's a fantastic comedian with a Comedy Central special and a friend, a dear friend for many years. And he also helped me. Was one of the roundtable comedians on the documentary that I shot, which is called Don't Wait, The Michael Schmidt Story. Actually, we renamed it. It's called The Funny Thing About Death, because nobody knows Michael Schmidt. But they will once we sell it.
anybody I've told about that experience, comedian or civilian, is really intrigued by the whole situation.
Yes.
All of it. All the different layers of it.
Yeah.
And thank you for having me to Alvarado World Headquarters, the studio.
I know. This is like, you. If you guys could see this room, it's I don't know, the size, a little bit bigger than a bathroom.
No, but... don't say that. Really, no, I love being here. Thank you. Yeah, really.
I mean, this is Hollywood, right? This is not like how you do it. Like you put a sheet behind you. You try to get some wrinkles on, some lights.
This
and,
place is fantastic. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, Peter, I haven't seen you in a while.
Nope. Like, it's been quite a bit.
Actually, since the documentary, since the roundtable, right?
That is true.
Yeah.
Correct.
So that you guys know, the long story short, the documentary is about a man whose dying wish was to perform stand-up comedy. And he asked me to help him. And I assembled an amazing group of comedians to help me write jokes for Michael. And he went up and he performed it before he passed. And it was just such a moving experience. It was crazy experience.
Yeah, I guess you probably don't have you could just describe what it's really about. But it's funny that you just chose that to say that that's what it was about.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. It's about life, right?
Yes.
And relationships. I mean, it's about your relationship and it's about way more than what you just said. That's what I think is extremely fascinating about it. And also it's something for each person that participated and helped. It was also something, there's a lot going on in that documentary.
Right.
Yeah. There's a lot going on.
So Michael had PLS, which is very similar to ALS, where he was in a wheelchair. And he was getting to the point where he was losing the ability to even move his arms. He was starting to lose his speech, and he chose death with dignity. So that was a whole nother facet to the documentary and like how we felt about that. And then writing jokes for a man that is suffering and passing away and trying to make that funny.
Yeah, I remember when you asked, well, at least when you asked me, and I'm assuming when you asked everybody, the immediate answer, I'm assuming, was yes.
Yeah.
Despite the circumstances, you know, which were odd, you know, but you're asking comedians to come help somebody in a situation be funny. So I'm assuming everybody you asked said yes. And the first thing I recall is we watched the video because he couldn't be there, the one I was at.
Right.
And I mean, that just blew everybody away. I mean, watching him introduce himself and say what he wanted and say what he expected.
Thank you so much for being here and helping me out with Michael. Before we start doing that, just so you guys can get a sense of who Michael is and his comedy sensibility, this is my very first interview with Michael.
So let me ask you this, comedically, what topics are not touchable, that are off the table?
I cannot think of a topic that's off the table.
Jeez.
You just can't offend me.
The comedians, I believe, from the get-go, really were impressed with Michael.
You know, we didn't continually sit around and process, like, how'd that make you feel? Or what do you think about that? But everybody felt a lot and everybody thought a lot. And then we tried to, you know, bring that to the situation, whatever that meant to all of us. So,
yeah, like we all react to things based on our life experience, right. Like how we were brought up, what we believe, the traumas that we've gone through in life. And so to bring that in, but also try to be funny, empathetic, you know, and then figure out where's the line.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but also gift him something. He asked for something.
Right.
And you're trying to gift him something. And then I can also only speak for myself, but I'm imagining everybody else also wanting, we're your friends and you you asked us.
Right.
And you entrusted all of us. So there was a sense of responsibility. You're not showing up at some bowling alley to tell jokes. I'm not,
right.
You know, everybody cares about you.
Right.
And if you said it was important, then it was important. And then you show up and then you watch him speak and you were like, oh, wow, this is really important. And then there was another part. Whatever the unknowing, you knew it was important, but you don't know what was going to happen after that either was compelling
right.
and
right.
interesting.
Yeah. I mean, as comedians, normally what we do is we write jokes for ourselves, or maybe you write jokes for another comedian or a TV show, but you're writing jokes that are uplifting. We're not used to writing jokes necessarily for someone else that is in a dire situation. And so that line of going, okay, he has PLS. How comfortable is he talking about all of the things that come with his disease?
And, matter of fact, I mean, not in a cruel way. That's how a lot of comics cope. I mean, one of the funniest things I ever been to in my life, I was a new comedian. I was in Michigan and a very well-respected comedian passed away suddenly. Mm. And we were at his wake and it might be the funniest night of my life. You know, just people saying like what a regular person would be appalled at someone saying.
Yeah.
And it was all said in love. And nobody was trying to be mean, even though if you're an outsider, it would have sounded mean-spirited or cold or gruesome or sacrilegious or all those things. And it was actually the ultimate in love. So when you said that he said that he was willing to listen to anything and wanted to hear anything, that was also interesting as trying to figure out, you know, what that
those
meant without being disrespectful. I remember thinking, though, that when you said anything goes, it was like, you recorded everything, but I remember thinking like, well, he gets to decide what that is. I mean, and what he decides is really that answer.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I remember being so happy when he said, no boundaries. Like I want to joke about every part of this disease, every part of the painful things that people don't know about, what it's like to have to get up out of bed with a nurse, what it's like to have to use the bathroom, but being stuck in this wheelchair and my life is limited and I have four children, how it affects them, how it affects my dating life. Like he wanted to talk about all of it. And it made our job easier because he didn't say, well, don't talk about the fact that I have to wear a diaper or don't talk about that. Like he was doing shitting himself jokes,
fantastic. I mean, you were speaking about specifically about that, but you have a relationship with this person who knows they're going to die.
Yes.
I mean, of the whole situation is we're all know we're going to die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we all don't live like that.
Right.
And he was.
Yes.
And he was sharing that with you, whether that was because he wanted to do stand up or whatever, you were a witness to that. I mean, a friend just told me, I was going to say, I'm not trying to be a bummer, but we're talking about someone who chose to take their life legally. But I had a friend that just, got told he had, 2 months to live. And, that had not happened to me with one of my friends yet. And I don't know, there was something also, I'm not the one who got that information, but we spoke at length about it. There was something also very, besides the, you know, how intense that is, there's also seemed something very light and freeing about it that for sure was happening. So I spoke freely with my friend about it. I'm assuming you spoke freely with Michael.
I did. He
about it, you know.
Initially, he was the one that was super comfortable with it.
Mm.
I think the other people are the ones that are not comfortable, like me. Like the people he would tell that he's dying, immediately you don't know how to respond to that. You want to hug him, do I give him empathy? Do I not talk about it? you go through the things in your mind of like, what's appropriate? What do they need? How do it's almost like you put it on yourself and start judging yourself of how you should treat that person, when really you just have to listen to what they want.
Yeah.
But we kind of go, oh, I can't ask them questions, or I have to be careful about what I say.
Well, this is your podcast and I'm interviewing you, but how would you say you have changed from that moment to now? Probably quite a bit, right?
It taught me so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never witnessed someone die. I've never been faced with the question of death with dignity, whether I would do it, whether how I would feel if my mom wanted to do it,
and how also your opinion doesn't quite really matter.
It doesn't, but if you're asking someone to be a part of it, it's just like saying you're not into drugs, but will you watch me do drugs or will you be a part of it?
Yeah.
That your stuff automatically, your experiences, your opinions, how you would face it. I never really, it's not that I didn't think about death. It's just, I never thought if I was suffering to that point and I knew that I would lose my motor skills, that I would be in pain every day. Initially, if you asked me if I would ever take my life, I would say absolutely not. But now I don't know. Like, because I'm not in that situation, so easy to say and judge others and go, I would never do that.
That's what I mean. I think at the end of the day, that's what you take from the whole, I'm assuming that's a big thing you take from it, is you don't know until you...
You don't know until you're in it. That's why the whole judgment thing about women should do this and that with their bodies. People should make this kind of decision.
Yeah, everybody should do this and that. Everybody should do this and that.
Yes.
Yeah, we have strong opinions.
And then when you're in it, when I watched him, I was like, I get it. And that's the whole human experience, is having empathy, not judgment, towards someone else. Mm. Going, oh my goodness, I can't imagine. I'm watching it. I still can't imagine what it's like to be you every day. So I have no right to tell you how to handle this. Even if I have different opinions, I want to just love you through it.
I think that's awareness and us getting older.
Yes. Yeah. Just getting more mature.
People complain about getting older. I think one great thing about getting older is probably empathy. I think that's I do. There's a bunch of stuff that sucks about getting older and it's scary about getting older.
Yeah.
But having empathy and acceptance, more acceptance over other people, that's probably a nice thing.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that's probably a bunch of stuff you got from the process, I'm assuming.
Yes, it just grew me up. It matured me, because how you have to deal with such heavy life things. And he wasn't a family member, but he became family to me through the process.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying any of this to be corny, and what a gift then.
Yeah.
What a gift he gives you, that it opened up a part of you that keeps... Here we are talking about this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming people listen to this and watch it, and you're affecting those people too.
Yeah. I can't believe that, I just started this podcast. It's fairly new. And just, I was doing shows in Michigan, and this guy came up to me, a man that was going through cancer, and saw Find the Funny, my episode interviewing Grace Fraga, and her story of breast cancer. And he just felt so encouraged, laughed, uplifted. And that's what we do. That's what comedians do, that we try to get people out of their sorrow and the hard things in life. And as well as us coping with our own pain, we take it on the stage.
Well, I started talking about this in my act. Like, I even open it with it sometimes. The notion, so it's on a bit. So see if you could follow along and explain one part of it to me is... Well, first of all, one thing I've never really liked, and I used to do it, is I don't like that everybody is always like, comedians, you're all fucked up. You know, it's like a thing. You're all fucked up. And other comedians say you're all fucked up.
Yeah.
We're all fucked up, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, now that I've lived a little bit, do you like watch the news or go on the internet? Like, everyone's fucked up.
Yeah,
like,
everybody.
Why do comedians get to own fucked up? Like school teachers.
Right.
And doctors and plumbers and athletes and everybody in between is fucked up.
Right.
So why do comedians, right? So that's the first thing. I'm like, well, why is it comedians? And then it's like, well, because we talk about it.
That's the only difference, right?
But not only do we talk about it, here's the thing that's interesting is, I'm not saying you have to be mean-spirited, but people also, when you talk about it, they don't want to hear you like talk about like your vacation to the Maldives. They want to hear about how you shit your pants on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
On the...
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear about the beautiful model you dated. They want to hear how the model I dated had a penis. Like,
yeah,
the,
yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's funny. Twice. Yeah. Twice, by the way. But then I'm like, so then you have that. They don't. What's the good stuff isn't what's funny. It's what the bad, we'll call it bad stuff, is what's funny. But then when they're laughing at though, they're not laughing at me or you.
Right.
Even though me or you might be talking about shitting your pants, that's not what they're laughing at. So what, I'm serious, what are they laughing at that creates that space for like joy or enlightenment? Because they're not laughing at us.
No, I think what they're laughing at is relatability. They go, oh my gosh, I remember that one time that I had Taco Bell and I got on a flight and I just couldn't stop with the gas. I was the person on the flight.
Right, that
was me. It's all about like, oh, they're saying my story, but I don't want to tell my story of embarrassment. I'll let them do it. And that laugh is like, yes, I felt that.
Right.
I know what
it's
that's like.
It's what's relatable. That's how you find the funny.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's interesting. I mean, most of the time they're definitely, when they're laughing and you're laughing about, and they're laughing about something like that, it's not because they're laughing at you. That's for sure.
No.
No, they're, yeah. And they're not necessarily also laughing with you either. It's some little space right in between there that makes them feel however they feel.
Right. And that's when you get those pops in the audience of someone like really exploding with laughter. You know that's because they just went through it, or their husband just went through it, or they feel this like, oh, now we're bonded because we're on the same team. I feel that way about that thing too, or that happened to me.
Well, I've been taking that notion a step further when I'm on stage. And like recently one time, and I kind of speak in this place on stage, and I'm only speaking for myself, and I'm not trying to be like grandiose. It's just like what I'm trying to do. But I've asked a crowd partway through my show, I go, how are you guys doing? Right. And before I can even finish the sentence several times, they all start clapping like comedy club clapping. Right. And then I go, no, I didn't mean like that. I meant like, how are you really doing? Right.
Yeah.
And then like every time, like 95% of them go, not that.
Wow.
And it's like, well, 3 seconds ago, everybody in here was doing great.
Yeah.
And then when I go, no.
For real.
How are you really doing? Like 95% of them aren't doing that great. And I'm not trying to like make everybody bummed at a show, but that's what I want to talk to.
Right.
And I don't even
want
to necessarily do my act differently.
Yeah.
I just want to speak to that. We all don't have to be full of shit and act like everything's okay. Like a second ago, you guys were all in on, we're
clapping.
Just going to act like it's okay.
Right.
And it's not okay. People are suffering spiritually or emotionally or financially.
Physically.
Or physically or whatever. And you were just saying what people find funny is the commonality of that thing.
Right.
And it's like, I just think for me, calling some attention to there's some commonality here that everybody's not doing that great. And that's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. We don't even have to get into it. How about we just start right there?
Right.
Which is not where we started shows.
Right.
How's everybody doing? Better than that. How's everybody doing? Which I actually feel like now that I don't know, look at things differently. I feel like some people are like, well, I'm not doing great. And everybody in here just said they're doing great. So me not doing great is even worse than it was a second ago. And I just think like a lot of us aren't doing that great. And maybe just in that moment.
I think as you mature as a comedian and a person, your material becomes more you, more, at least I hope. My material, I feel like, has become a little more vulnerable.
So am I. Me going on stage now, it means more to me now than it ever did.
Do you remember when we were trying to come up with an opener for Michael? Because...
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I believe I said something super inappropriate.
Which I love.
And because most people knew him, so it wasn't going to work. But I believe I had him like mumbling and slurring and saying something like
that's
that.
That's just the thing. It's like, and Michael was totally cool with everything that we came up with.
Yeah.
He just picked what his favorites were.
Yeah.
And his set was about 15 minutes, which is a long time for a new comedian, especially someone that's never done it.
Yeah.
But then you have these like 10 comics that came in and wrote, I'm talking comics that have Emmys, specials, Tonight Show sets, like that we're established comedians. So we're giving him our best material for him that we wrote. So he had just gems to pick
you
from.
Acquired, you gathered up quite a list of people to
quite
write.
Quite an army of fantastic, and comics from every different walk of life. Mm-hmm. I wanted men, women, different ethnicities, different experiences in life, and different levels of comedy too, different styles.
Yeah, and then he chose what spoke to him.
Yeah, he did. This is a joke that we wrote as his opener, and this is one from Dana Eagle, started a joke talking about what his final wish would be, and we were going to have this be one of his openers.
I think yours was the second joke.
It was the second joke. Why wasn't it the first joke?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming out tonight.
Which I think is a really good angle. So Dana Eagle wrote, thank you for coming out tonight. And thank you to Lisa for helping my wish come true. Well, my second wish.
Yeah.
And that could either imply sex with Lisa, or it can imply I want a cure.
It goes both ways. This is sex with Lisa.
No, it's a guy. It was not a cure.
That's the tag, is that Lisa thought the first wish was a cure.
Yeah.
No.
That's like fourth.
Yeah.
That's like fourth on the list. Oh, man, I just love watching. I mean, I hope everybody gets to see this somehow.
I know.
I really do. I hope everybody gets to see it.
I'm working on it.
And pretty awesome for you. I mean, like, you know, all these people that you like and that you respected, and you could just see how we all dealt with a lot of different things, like the subject matter, being generous of spirit, and also how everybody worked as comedians. I mean, that must have been while the whole purpose was going on. It must have been pretty awesome.
It was a range of emotions. The stress level, though, and
what, because you wanted to do to everybody justice.
This guy's final wish. You know what I mean? It's in, and I'm get assembling all these people that I'm asking favors. Nobody got paid. I didn't get paid. Sarah, the editor, didn't get paid. This was just all everybody out of their own generosity to want to help another human. So to make it like a great environment for the comics, we were comfortable to get Michael there from San Diego. You know, when it's really hard for him to sit in a car for 2-3 hours at a time, it hurts his legs, his body.
Isn't it funny the stuff we, I'm just telling you as an outsider, if you were like, are you at all concerned with how Lisa would treat you doing this thing?
Yeah.
Not at all, right? At all concerned how well she would make you look or not look? Not at all. Are you concerned that she might not do a nice job and do this person service? Not at all. And it's funny, those are all your considerations that I guarantee you everybody that participated wasn't even thinking.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
I just think that's funny because those are not anything that anybody involved was concerned with. And they were big concerns of yours.
I just wanted everybody to be comfortable and to not have to put too much of their day on the table, you know, because we all have jobs, we have kids and families and responsibilities. And I wanted to make sure that Michael was comfortable and he wasn't offended by anything, because it's different when people go, oh, anything goes. And then you do it and then people are pissed off. It's just like in audiences nowadays.
I'm not even asking you to name names, but were you able to discern the level of like, I don't know, not comedy, but the generosity of spirit from people for whatever reason, like their comfort level? Were you able to?
Yes.
Were you surprised by that with certain people?
I think everybody was at a different comfort level with what they were writing for, a man that's just about to pass and that is suffering. So, like, I think Brian Kiley was a little less comfortable talking about, like, just really didn't want to offend him. Because, like I said, people will go, yeah, anything goes. But then you say something and then all of a sudden it affects their heart. And I was really concerned with that too, but he likes my comedy and I'm pretty dark. So
how about a random groups of comedians who are tasked to write together? that's a whole nother thing that people don't even understand.
Right.
What the comfort level is and with people saying things amongst their peers.
Right. Exactly.
For not sitting around talking, drinking, having coffee, goofing around, but for a purpose.
Right.
That's a whole nother element that Well, you can't make people think things when they watch this, but it would be there's, like I said, there's a lot going on. So it'd be very
interesting
if people take the time to appreciate all the different things that are going on.
All the different nuances.
Yeah.
I mean, just even how we were writing together, a lot of the jokes were started off as one idea. And then it was fantastic to watch the comedians tag it, switch it, just add their own little take on it.
Why, if somebody says something and nobody laughs, that also doesn't even mean it wasn't funny. That might be get that. And then
that's what comedians are like. They're
and
that's
they all
brilliant.
Laugh, and then they might all laugh because there's no way you would ever do that, or that's it. So also how everybody works, you know, you just played a clip and there's a lot of like nodding, and that's
normal.
That's normal.
With comics,
normal.
We're killing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually hate that part about comedians because I tend to be a big laugher. Like if you watch the round table, I'm laughing through the whole thing, but I'm a different kind of comedian. Like I know Alonzo is normally like, that's good. And that's someone killing for Alonzo to go, oh, that was a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that one.
Leo did that joke about, I have PLS and, you know, I can't even get the cool disease.
Is there something about, because everybody knows about ALS, you know, there's some funds that are
that's
not,
hilarious that you're like, dying of the less known disease.
Right, right. Because like ALS like is like
luck,
Stephen Hawking.
Your luck isn't bad enough. Like you didn't even get the good disease.
Right,
you
got
PLS.
You get the one that nobody knows about.
Less commonly known as Steve Gehrig's disease.
Yeah. Who worked at a gas
station? I was just going to say, he's not even in the league playing ball.
Yeah, I couldn't get ALS. That's the big one.
You got to know somebody to get ALS.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
But that's what I mean. Everybody's different people.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you're laughing and having a good time. Well, not laughing doesn't mean you're not having a good time either. You just focus on the task differently.
We're just looking at the joke like, oh, that was good. That
so
was
I think that's an interesting element of watching everybody work together.
Right, exactly. So we're all taking these premises and someone will write a joke and then we're just adding and tweaking and taking things away and then going, oh, this perspective. There's a part about stand-up comedy, and even in this, Michael was being self-deprecating. Most comedians do a couple jokes that kind of cut him down and make him a little more relatable to the audience, myself included. But I wanted a joke, at least one, where Michael wins.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to play this one right here. Michael was really uncomfortable to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, until he understood, and I tried to explain to him, you need to win in some of this. And you've probably been mistreated being in a wheelchair at some point. So this is a joke that I wrote with Brian Kiley, where it started off with because I'm saying his comfort level, he's not like that edgy of a comedian. He's pretty clean. So when he wrote something saying, well, don't you have to be able to stand up? And I go, well, he's got to have a biting response because that was mean what she said. And for him to just take that, being in a wheelchair, people think he's weak. So he's got to come back and win. And as we went, he got more and more comfortable with it. So this is us practicing the joke.
Nice. I want you to try, because I know you got to go. Can you try that one joke that we redid for you? It's going to work. I promise you. Plus, you have to win in one of these jokes. All of these other jokes, most of them are self-deprecating. This one, you win.
I put my neighbor on one of the new stand-up comedy.
Yep.
She said, don't you have to be able to stand up to do stand-up? I said, don't you have to be on your period to be a bitch?
I nailed it! That was so good. Gets me every time.
Every time.
On stage.
Got me every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing is he was afraid to say something mean about a woman. And I go, woman, man, child, whoever, they have the capability to be really mean. And you're just leveling the field, you know. You're not calling her a bitch because she's just walking down the hallway. You're calling her a bitch because of how she's treating you. And it's really even just calling the behavior bitchy.
Did he explain to you why he picked the ones he picked? And did you have much to say about it? Like you said, you told him he needs to win in that one, but did he explain to you why he picked what he picked?
He just picked the ones basically that resonated the most with him. Mm-hmm. And if he felt uncomfortable with anything, he didn't obviously do those. And the other one...
When they talk about these guys in prison picking their last meal, which, by the way, I don't know if I could ever do. Like, I'm not good with your favorite this or your favorite that. But he's literally picking... All he wants to do is stand up, and he's picking all these jokes for a reason. How fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
How fascinating.
Yeah, because there were a couple...
You know what I mean?
I think that he was like, he didn't relate to as well. And that's a part of it. It's not that they weren't funny. It's just he didn't feel it. It wasn't resonating with him, you know?
You encouraged him a little bit on some of like the ones about the winning.
Well, with this one in particular is one of the ones that he had the hardest time with. So this is Michael actually performing the joke. And even in the joke, he's unsure of it on stage, how sometimes we are with a new joke. And then when he sees it work, you should see the look on his face of like, oh my gosh, she was right. And that's where he needs to trust our level of skill. Actually, let's show him doing it in his set.
I told my neighbor I wanted to do stand-up comedy. She said, don't you have to be able to stand up to do stand-up? I said, don't you have to be on your period to be a bitch?
The crowd goes nuts. Look at how happy they are that he won. Look at his face. He's in shock.
Hang on 1 second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just because what I'm trying to do nowadays, I'm trying to honor what I'm thinking and feeling.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not trying to be corny, but yeah. What a nice... What a nice vibe, this podcast
that's why I love theater.
Then the documentary, really. Like, I mean, dude, I'm not like this all the time, but we just all be way more empathetic.
Yes.
Way more empathetic.
Yeah.
To ourselves and to other people.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's how I feel
beautiful.
Right now, talking to you, watching this.
You guys, sometimes I don't know if I'm going to enjoy my guest as much as I did. But this is going to be a two-parter because Peter is so awesome and we need to hear more of his wisdom.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, just the way that you deal with life, your perspectives, it's so much deeper than the normal friendships that I have and with comedians.
Ah.
Because a lot of us are a little bit afraid and kind of guarded, and sometimes we just lead with the comedy, but it's the opposite with Peter. Like you and I lead with depth and like all these layers, and then sometimes there's comedy in it.
Okay.
But I love our relationship and I love him as a comic. He's so gifted. Please go see his stuff. Where are you going to be in Vegas soon?
I'm going to be in Vegas the last couple days of May, the beginning of June at the Oyo, O-Y-O Casino. It's behind the Tropicana.
Awesome.
And this and that.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter's everywhere. Definitely check out his stuff. And we will see you again in 2 weeks because he's awesome.
I hope everybody listens to my daughter and see it and laughing with her because she is very funny.